Now, stand back for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
Welcome to episode 24 of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, now with 100% more Comic-Con plague-infected hosts. I'm Kevin, your disease-riddled guide through this week's news, reviews, and nerdery. But first, I need to thank our sponsor. Back by popular demand is Grilled Cheese Peace Theater. Hey son, how was preschool?
Great! I told the teacher what the inline 6 is better than the 8.
Well, obviously it is. What did she say after that?
She asked if I wanted sauerkraut.
That's kind of funny, I guess.
What is sauerkraut?
It's a German creation. Finely cut cabbage that is fermented in a lactic acid that produces a pungent, slightly sour flavor.
What?
It's the stringy bits inside the Tom and Chi Reuben.
Ooh, I love those.
So, did you eat lunch today?
If I say no, can I get grilled cheese?
Doesn't matter. We're going there now.
And now the news.
And I still use this device, news. Microsoft has finally pulled the plug on the Kinect. Despite selling about 35 million units over 7 years of its life, Kinect never really caught on in the living room. While it lived up to several of its promises, it turns out people would rather have a little speaker with Alexa in it than Cortana on their TV. What blows me away is that Google, Apple, and Amazon are trying to get their assistants to work with televisions better, something that Microsoft has already done. I can talk to Cortana, have her turn on the TV, change the channel, turn up the volume, adjust the color, surf the web, and make Skype calls all by using my voice. But it turns out, I was the only one doing these things. Kinect's greatest achievements was when it was used by developers outside the home entertainment setting. The tens of thousands of infrared cameras that Kinect had were put to use in interesting ways. In fact, Apple's iPhone 8 and 10 face scanning technology largely comes miniaturizing Microsoft's Kinect. South Korea actually uses them to watch their northern border. Artists have used it to help create holograms of themselves while performing. It really is a neat little camera. But now, who cares? AR and VR are the rage, and having Cortana in your Xbox makes no sense if she can't hear or see you. So why have it? All the money and missed potential flushed down the drain because either people weren't tech savvy enough to use all of the features, or they were ignorant of those features to begin with. Or maybe people just didn't want those features at the time. But now they do? And you're quitting? Okay, I knew it was inevitable, but this still makes me sad.
Yes, poor devil. Still, justice was served. At this rate, you'll be lead DA again in no time, Harvey.
Batman nabs the super crooks, and I send them to the state pen.
The same place Batman sent you.
Why, Dick. I hope you don't feel like a third wheel when I'm around. After all, I'm only Bruce's best friend. You're his ward.
In the Bugs Are Back news, the Hive Fleet has been punching into the Milky Way for a while now, and their codex has been mired in 6th edition playstyle since 2012. Well, guess what? A new codex is on the horizon, and the tabletops are going to be mired in Tyranid Host. I can't get into a ton of detail, but I will share a snippet of the rules changes that was leaked by Spiky Bits this week. Instinctive behavior has been completely reworded. This ability now comes into effect if the High Fleet unit with this ability is at least 24 inches from a friendly High Fleet Synapse unit, compared to the old rule where there was a range of Synapse Bubble. If you are outside of that 24-inch range, you must subtract 1 from the hit rolls made when shooting any target other than the nearest visible enemy unit. Additionally, you must subtract 2 from its charge roll if it declares a charge against any unit other than the nearest enemy. You're no longer limited to shooting and charging the nearest enemy unit. Instead, you just suffer a penalty. This is a great way to show the hive mind of the Tyranids, and ensuring that you're running the hordes that are ever so common with the Tyranid army. Strategically place your units within a synapse, and you should be able to sweep the table without having to worry about instinctive behavior coming into effect. Synapse also allows to automatically pass morale tests if they are within 12 inches of a friendly hive unit with this ability. It used to be only 8 inches range, and that extra 4 should make it a lot easier for you to position your models in that new 24-inch range that I was talking about earlier, while attacking and defending and ensuring that there is that bubble is there to prevent any additional model loss. Also, Shadow in the Warp is getting a big range increase. Enemy psychers must subtract 1 from the psychic test if they are within 18 inches of any units with this ability. But the Tyranid psychers are not affected. This is a big change. It used to be only 10 inches.
A coin decides their fates. Tough luck, boys. Batman and Robin will live. For now.
Boss, are you nuts? We owe it to every crime-abiding crook in town to crush the Caped Coppers. It's the ethical thing to do.
And can we stop being dickish capitalists to each other news? Fresh off of working for the Court of Nerds at the Grand Rapids Comic Con, I got to see behind the curtain of how things get pulled off and how much tensions and stress there can be in making an entire endeavor come together. Which is why the news coming out of California pissed me off so much. A federal appeals court is declaring a gag order that was imposed on the backers of Comic-Con convention to the unconstitutional infringements of speech. A San Diego federal judge had prohibited the organizers of Salt Lake City Comic-Con from taking to social media like Twitter, Facebook, and even the event's website to discuss being sued for allegedly infringing the, quote, Comic-Con, end quote, trademark. What I mean by con is literally the words comic-con. Quote, petitioners assert that the court ordered prior restraints on their speech violate the First Amendment. We agree, end quote, the San Francisco-based 9th District U.S. Court of Appeals had ruled. The gag order was issued as part of an ongoing trademark lawsuit brought by the producers of the San Diego Comic-Con. They sued competing, quote, Comic-Con, end quote, conventions for using the unhyphenated form of their trademark logo, Comic-Con, without paying licensing fees. The case raises questions about the legitimacy of the trademark, in particular whether the trademark has become too generic, and hence a victim of its own pop culture popularity. U.S. District Judge Anthony Bagaletta blah blah blah, I can't pronounce his name, sorry, had issued a gag order against Dan Farr Productions, the Salt Lake Comic-Con producer. The judge ruled that Dan Farr Productions' online campaign about the case could taint the jury pool in the upcoming trial over the trademark. You think? In the trial, Dan Farr Productions will argue that the trademark phrase cannot sustain its trademark because it has become too generic. Just like the words teleprompter, thermos, aspirin, and videotape, all of which fell out of the trademark because of genericide. Quote, in the view of the comments, postings, and discussions initiated by the defendants of their various social media platforms, it is clear that to the court that a serious and imminent threat to fair trial outweighs the First Amendment rights at stake, end quote, Judge, I can't pronounce his name, had ruled in July when issuing the gag order. Dan Farr Productions asked the Ninth Circuit to vacate the order, and the appeals court did so last Thursday, as the appeals court wrote, quote, San Diego Comic-Con has presented no evidence as to how many, if any, of the approximately 35,200 Twitter followers are registered voters in the San Diego and Imperial counties, and how many, if any, of the 120,000 attendees of the 2014 Salt Lake Comic-Con convention in Utah are even possibly members of the current San Diego-era jury pool. End quote. No trial date has been set at this time. Okay. Comic conventions are about money. Yes, let's never forget that. But let's be honest about what SDC is doing. They're pissed that other people took their format and have made it successful, and now people don't have to travel thousands of miles to go to a single convention. You could only grow so much, San Diego, before this would happen. It's basic economics and market reality. Stop being a bunch of whale's vaginas and stop suing your brothers in arms. You are only hurting your own industry.
The Batcomputer can't seem to turn up any suspects who might want to frame Harvey.
It's because Dent's the one behind it. You're letting Bruce Wayne's friendship with him taint your crime-fighting objectivity.
And you're letting Dick Grayson's insecurity taint yours.
Holy blind spot, Batman! How can you not see Dent's up to his neck in this?
Sirs, Robin, I haven't had to say this in quite some time. Go to your room.
In I Look for Any Excuse to Spend More Time in Middle-Earth reviews, I finished the third act of Middle-Earth Shadow of War, and I must say, during the 30 or so hours it took me to get there, I had fun. But I didn't have as much fun as I had playing Shadow of Mordor. So the story of Shadow of Mordor continues in Shadow of War, as Talion, the Gondor ranger who died at the Black Gate, was infused with the spirit of Celebrimbor, the elf lord of the Second Age, who Sauron had forged the Rings of Power. And he seeks vengeance on the Dark Lord for all that was taken from him by using the forces of darkness against darkness. You gain new allies like Shelob, and new enemies like the Nazgul. The mechanics of the game is the same as the previous game. Build up your orc armies and take down fortresses using the Nemesis system. It's fun, not overly complicated, and can lead to some humorous conversations and interactions with deranged orcs. The difference is, there is just more. A lot more. The maps are bigger, and there's just a whole lot more to do. Now we have Firedrakes which you can ride, and Balrog to fight. It's beautiful in its dark bounty. But there are some drawbacks. I loved the first game. It blended lore in delicate ways that didn't overtly step on the canon, but used it to help shape the story that it wanted to tell. The second game is a bit more blunt and does manage to trample a bit of the lore while trying to tell its story. Now, I know that Tolkien doesn't name all the Ringwraiths, but Isildur should not be one of them since he led the charge against Sauron in the Second Age and took the Ring of Power. The game shows Sauron giving him a ring after that. But come on! Sauron was not fully formed when he fell. And how the hell could he have given him one of the 9 rings which were already forged? I mean, presumably, one of the 9 kings of men had already had it. It doesn't make any sense. If I continue going down this vein, I'm going to get really upset. But to summarize, you didn't need to make Isildur a Nazgul. You could have made up another unnamed king. But you want people, you know, that you recognize in the game lore, and you want to stuff that into a game, even though there's no reason to do it. You shouldn't have done it. I don't like it. Act 4 allows you to just play around in the world of Perpetual War. I won't give away the non-ending ending, but you can probably already guess it for yourself. Hopefully, the DLC will allow something a bit more different to happen. I don't know what it'll be, but the game ended sour for me, so I'm hoping it will take my mind off of the poor writing. In summary, at the end of the game, I rated a 8.5 out of 10 sugar-addicted orcs, because it's still pretty, and it's still super fun to play.
Now, why would a Gondorian come here and try to murder all of the orcs? Maybe you have a problem with one orc. Maybe 100. But all of us? Maybe the problem is with you.
I don't like the orcs. I'm a thinker. I think good. And I think hard. Harder than all the rest. And that's what makes me the most bestest. Remember me now and hear me later. I am the Abstitute Bestest! Yeah! Meet my claw! Perhaps you don't recognize me, because
because now I have a claw where my hand used to be. You took one of my bits. Now I'm gonna take one of yours.
Oh, Wheel of Insanity, what do you have for me today? It says, talk about MSRP and consumer price speculation and price fixation. Huh, well this is timely. Best Buy made some huge waves by deciding to sell the iPhone X10 $100 above MSRP and only to customers having to be locked into their payment plan. You can't buy the phone outright and you need to pay for it over time. This is something unheard of from a large national store retailer, and they have received a lot of negative press. But will it affect them? And why are they doing it? First off, manufacturer's suggested retail price is just that, a suggestion. In a purely capitalist Adam Smith-type world, an item is worth that which the consumer is willing to pay for it. Fortunately, we have some protections in place to keep snake oil salesmen at bay. But should consumer electronics fall under the aegis of consumer protection? What has stopped retailers from doing this in the past? Well, for popular consumer items, if a retailer sells an item above MSRP, they risk blowback and lack of sales. If you can buy the same MacGuffin down the street for less, the consumer will go down the street and purchase it from the rival. Or so the wisdom goes. It doesn't take very long to start poking holes in this logic, though. If demand is high and supply is low, then that MacGuffin is more valuable. If multiple retailers raise above MSRP the same amount, questions of price fixing and market manipulation can arise, and that's something most retailers want to avoid. But what if one retailer's presence is so large that it dwarfs the smaller competitors who are only allocated a small amount of product for sale? Then the big retailer doesn't really care because those sales are smaller than the profit that will be made when you sell on the high-demand, low-supply MacGuffin. What about the second-hand sellers and retailers like pawn shops and eBay resellers who will then sell the product at an even higher rate? Lock those original buyers into payment plans so that they can't make a windfall, and you still have guaranteed extra profit for your MacGuffin. You realize that when I say MacGuffin, I mean iPhone, right? Then let's drop the pretense then. It seems Apple is the only one that can really affect Best Buy by stripping them of their allocation. Apple has their own storefronts after all, and they will sell them. But Apple doesn't have nearly as many storefronts as Best Buy, and they're making the same amount of money either way, so why would they do something? To protect their consumer? Their consumer is used to paying extra for the privilege of being an Apple consumer. What could possibly stop this? Well, what if we were all wrong about demand? I have some first-hand experience in this. In 2006, Sony released the PlayStation 3. There were two systems at launch, the $600 backwards compatible system and the $500 for non-backwards compatible systems. These are hefty price tags even today, and the new Xbox One X that comes out next week, that's $500. And it's by far more powerful than its competitor, the PlayStation 4 Pro. Also, the developers had a hard time with Sony's cell architecture. Games on the 360 Microsoft system at the time, that was came out a year ahead of time, by the way, the games that were multi-platform for both systems, by and large, looked better and played better on the Microsoft hardware. Also, many of Sony's games required large installs that took a very long time. See Ninja Gaiden, for example. I was running a GameStop at the time, and we, of course, had many pre-orders for the system, as did every retailer. eBay was booming with selling pre-orders just the year prior with the 360s, and just the week before with the Nintendo Wii. When launch came, systems sat on shelves and continued to sit on shelves. Penny Arcade's Mike Krolik documented himself going from store to store, showcasing how many systems there were on each shelf because Sony of America's VP said he would buy someone a system if they could find one available. eBayers were in panic, trying to sell back systems to retailers, even though they didn't purchase at that specific retailer, and retailers that didn't pay attention to serial numbers, Walmart, lost millions of dollars taking back systems they never sold. Those original systems sat on my shelf for over a year, and in some stores, up to two. Sony made a stripped-down version within a year to remedy this, but it was too late. Sony played catch-up after a generation. eBayers got screwed, retailers got screwed, and the manufacturer got screwed because everyone misjudged demand. Is that the case now for the iPhone X, X? Apple fanboys have put up with a lot. My guess is they will keep putting up with it.
Well, thanks for giving old Charlie Stories a listen. So, what'd y'all think? Oh, candy! Happy Halloween!
Hey guys, it's Drew. Tom and Chee Granville is back with some impressive meal deals. Here's what you can look forward to if you stop by and get cheesy. If you're always searching for the kids' menu, look no further than Tom and Chee, where kids under 12 eat free from 4 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday, or enjoy half-off grilled cheese donuts every Wednesday from 4 to 8 p.m. And if you download the free Tom and Chee app, pop in every Thursday and get $3 classic grilled cheese sandwiches. Tom and Chee is also proud to support Chia. I think that's how I say it. A locally made vegan cheese that tastes so good, cows are starting to get jealous. Find Tom and Chee on 44th Street in Granville, near Cabela's.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Stay tuned to this RSS feed to listen to our new D&D podcast, Reverse Centaurs. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds saying, get out of here. Get out of here, you stupid kids. Bye.